Banter with the Irish, your weekly podcast for the banter, music and crack with guests from all over Ireland and of course, not forgetting myself, your presenter, Margaret McHugh. Check it out on anchor.fm/banterwiththeirish. Welcome along to this week's podcast with myself, Margaret McHugh. You are tuned in to Banter with the Irish and today's guest is Peter Clancy from Lochry Distillery in Lanesborough, County Longford. Now you can check out Lochry Distillery at www.lrd.ie. They are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. They are on all social media platforms, so please do look them up and support your own local business. So if you want to buy some home produced whiskey from Longford and send it to your family who are living overseas, please do check them out. Now earlier on I spoke to Peter about the business when it all started and his vision for the future, and Peter Clancy is just one of the owners along with his brother and sister Sheila Clancy. So I'd like to wish them all the best and I'm going to let Peter take over.
The idea probably came to us about 5 years ago, really. It was just a casual conversation around the dinner table and prompted us to look at the idea. And it was originally, we do a micro distillery. My brother Michael knew a good bit about the space. I didn't know a whole lot about it. And we just started with the idea and exploring it, talked to the local Leo, got some funding from them to look at the kind of feasibility end of it. You know, really what kind of came out of that was there was a kind of a scale you needed to do this at that was economical, if you like, or that was a business as opposed to a lifestyle business. So the notion was it would be a business that certainly myself and Michael could get involved in. Our sister Sheila came on board not too long after that. So then the kind of size of the business and the number of us that we wanted working in the business nearly needed to be a business that would sustain that, you know. And we looked around at various sites and that kind of stuff. And we looked in earnest then at the site right across the road from where we are now, the old post office building in Lanesborough. And, you know, that's a fabulous site. And, you know, roundabout way, I suppose, managed to secure possession of it and went into the kind of formal planning process in terms of how we put the thing together. And, you know, just pre-COVID, actually, we ended up finally getting our fire cert for that building and the plans we have for that building. So, you know, COVID has kind of derailed the plans a little bit, but it's there and it's pretty much ready to go. But about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, then we had sort of said to ourselves, listen, there was a big food fair here, 2016, 2017, Taste of the Lakelands down in the car park across the road, massive successful event. Sort of said, listen, we really should be looking at launching a product at this food fair. It's our hometown. It's right outside where our future distillery is going to be. And we sort of committed to ourselves, having been at it in 2017, that we would launch a product in 2018 at it. So then, obviously, our bigger project was, getting bigger and, you know, was kind of taking a life of its own. So we were still anxious to realize our commitment to ourselves on that. And in around March, April time 2018, took the decision to listen, we'd look at, could we set up a micro distillery somewhere in the interim? And premises we're in now, which is an old butcher shop, was available and was suitable, and we actually had a small still ordered. So a lot of kind of things came together very, very quickly. So that led us then to setting up our micro distillery here on Main Street in Lanesborough, which literally, is a fully licensed operating distillery in its own right. And really, I suppose we're limited to a certain extent what we can make here. We can make gin, we can make vodka, but it's not the right scale to get into making whiskey. I suppose another kind of key factor in that decision was our whole vision is bring to the world from our hometown of Lanesborough the finest, most highly regarded Irish spirits. So, you know, when we were toying with the idea of micro distillery, or we could have gone and got the product made from wherever and put our own label on it, doing it in Lanesborough, setting up our operation in Lanesborough was the critical decision point in it. So, here we are now today. We've had this distillery up and running for a couple of years. We launched our, I suppose, core product, Slingshot Irish Gin, at the food fair October 18, as planned. And since then, it's been a case of establishing routes to market for that product, developing other products, bringing the main kind of capital project or the bigger distillery project along, and just kind of growing and developing the business, but also the brand. What we kind of try to point out to people is, you know, really what we're about here is developing an international drinks brand, okay? Of which the distillery is part of that, our product portfolio is part of it, the visitor center is part of it. So it's not just a distillery for the distillery's sake. The distillery is part of the overall picture. And, you know, hopefully you can kind of see that. And again, we would have worked extensively with Borbia on that, on like our brand strategy and everything else. So you can kind of see in terms of everything we do with the brand, our brand is all about connection to the area. So lots of people comment on our logo and the two guys in the boat out fishing, which is typical of what you would see out in Loch Ree now. I mean, you're from down near Strokestown. You would see it down in Kilglass Lake. You would see it on any of the lakes around the Midland. It resonates with people because it's a familiar sight, and it's got a kind of calmness and I suppose a localness to it, and maybe even an ordinariness to it, that I think resonates with people.
I love that Midland. Try and do something different and try and take the logo and make it something completely different to what Lanes represents.
Yeah, I think, you know, for Via there, you know, and if you ever sit through an exercise with them, it's you go into kind of this depth in terms of what your values are and brand values. And, you know, the challenge then for your creative people is to try and translate those into the kind of manifestation of it, which is the logo and all the other collateral you develop. So, you know, when we look at our brand values, you know, it's all about being who we say we are, you know, being true to ourselves, transparency, sustainability. So that ties back in again where, you know, it's Loch Ree Distillery. We are here in rural Ireland, I suppose, but this is our town. This is the town we grew up in that we're passionate about. And this, we feel, is a very good symbol for what we'll see around this town, particularly during the summer. But again, the fishing is a year-round activity. I mean, there's probably guys out in the lake today. So, you know, listen, we're pretty happy with it. And you know, you often get comments from people who, I suppose, maybe are country people at heart, and the symbology of that kind of resonates with them. And whether that's in Loch Ree or down in Kilglass or up in lakes up in Cavan or lakes up in Westmeath or whatever, it's a fairly common sight.
When you look around, you almost get lost in the products you have, like your Slingshot, which was the drink you launched. Then you have the citrus vodka, and then you have the distilled Irish gin and the Irish whiskey, and you get lost in the variety of stuff you have to offer. You have even like handmade dark chocolate truffles. You have lovely little gift hampers. Like, you have everything I think people can afford and want at whatever level of money you have to spend, especially coming up to Christmas.
Yeah, and listen, that's been a learning curve for us. So this is our third Christmas. You know, what you realize is you have to try and cater for, you know, not everyone wants to spend, you know, the 40 or 45 euros on our Slingshot premium gin, but lots of people still want to support you, you know. I mean, my own mother probably included, that's nearly a lifetime investment, spending 45 quid on a bottle of gin. To some other people, that's a normal, okay? So really what we've tried to do is cater for variety across all kind of price points. And one of the objectives being is, you know, and what you quickly learn about this business is there's a phrase in it called liquid to lips, right? So you've got to get people tasting your product, okay? And, you know, if you're confident enough in the quality of your product and that it's good product, then getting people to taste it over time will get them to come back and, you know, return and buy your product again. So that's what we try to do here, particularly, say, with our at-home tasting flight. And again, there's a couple of different bits around this, right? But, you know, it's to allow people an opportunity at an affordable price, I mean, the 25 euros. So it's basically a ready-made sampler of our Slingshot gin, our zesty vodka, our actual gin, some tonics, a glass, and a cocktail recipe card, which allows them to basically get a decent taste of our product and some ideas in terms of how to use it, how to present it. And again, some of this is nearly, I won't say it's a reaction to COVID, but, you know, COVID forced us to kind of look at an awful lot of elements of our business and see some of them very differently. So previous to this, the kind of tried and tested route for getting people to taste your product was to go into, say, some of the off licenses and do tastings. Right. Even pre-COVID, that was becoming less and less because the new drink driving laws meant people were very conscious about even taking the smallest taste. With the COVID world, the pubs were closed, restaurants were closed. So people had a limited opportunity to taste our product before they actually went out and bought a bottle of it necessarily. So that's where we come up with this at-home tasting flight. Again, it's a simple, easy, cheap way for people to taste our product. And we've worked hard on the presentation of it and all of these things. And even in that, there's been huge learnings for us in terms of the shipping side of it and learning that. Every year is progress. So versus, you know, this year, 2020, I suppose, versus last year and the year before, in terms of COVID forces to move an awful lot of our stuff online and dealing with the kind of fulfillment, packaging end of that and getting the product out there. But it's worked tremendously well for us. So pretty happy, very, very tired and very busy at this time of the year, but we're pretty happy with how it's gone.
That's what I love about the store is, you know, click and collect. If you don't want to come in, just go online and look at your website. It's so well done. And scroll through, you can pick everything you want. You can spend hours on the website just getting little gifts going, that's for this person, that's for that person. It has everything.
Yeah, it's, and again, you know, previous to this, previous to COVID, online offerings in the kind of alcohol sector were pretty poor, apart from, say, some of the bigger retailers. So say the likes of Celtic Whiskey Shop, Brian's, Irish Malt, people like that, right? But they, the kind of distilleries themselves weren't great at it, right? And you know, because previously most of the product moved through wholesalers, either directly into kind of offline sales, as in off licenses, or the on trade, as in pubs and restaurants. Okay, so if you take the pubs and restaurants out of the equation, right? Who've been most of them? I mean, there's pubs in Dublin that we are customers of ours who haven't opened since the 12th of March, right? And probably won't. Be lucky if they open by the 12th of March next year. So that's a huge chunk of market, okay. And then if you take the kind of the off license side of it, the off trade end of it. So in the absence of the on trade, okay, everyone is now focusing on the off trade to try and get products, right? And you can see it at this time of the year. What the bigger guys do is they come in and the price just drops, right, dramatically. Now the public health alcohol bill should correct that. I believe that's the last year of this, but you know, you can go into any of the major retailers and find product on the shelf there at, you know, ridiculous prices. You know, if you take a bottle of spirits that's on the shelf at 20 quid, you know, you'll even see them at 18 quid. If you take out the VAT and the excise out of that, there's somewhere between kind of €3.50 and €4.50 left for the retailer's margin, the distributor's margin, and the producer, right? So for guys like us, we just can't compete in that space, right? So, and that's what we've seen is where, you know, our product's on the shelf, but the volume is shifting in the lower cost products. Whereas what we've tried to do is, I'm not alone in this, lots of other distilleries have been on this journey this year, is substantiate our online offering and really, you know, I suppose tap into the sentiment that's there this year, particularly around supporting Irish, supporting local, realizing that, you know, everyone's had a tough year with COVID. And, you know, getting your messaging right, and particularly on the likes of social media and that. So that's something we put an awful lot more emphasis and planning and structure into this year. But it has translated back into sales. So that's been very good. I think going forward, let's say COVID was gone tomorrow and the world corrected itself over 6 months. I think online is going to be an increasing part of this business, because now people have got more used to getting product delivered, whether it's a jersey from, you know, Elvery's, or whether it's a box of chocolates from somebody or whatever, that now has become the new norm, right? And I think the drink side of it, that will continue. Certainly, I wouldn't say it'll be the same as it currently is, but if you sort of said online was maybe 5% of the route to market before this, I think online would be a multiple of that going forward. So for us, we see that as a positive, because, you know, it allows us then to kind of keep using that as a channel to market. You know, so listen, it's been, like all of these things, a huge learning experience. We're delighted this year with how it has gone for us. There's certainly lots of things we would tweak, both on the website end of it, on the packaging end of it, on the kind of fulfillment end of it going forward. But you know, that's what life is about, I suppose, is keep learning, you know.
Just talk me through some of the products. I'm looking at the whiskey here at the back, and it's very well packaged again, and the citrus vodka and the slingshot. Just talk about each product and the ingredients, and in a few minutes we'll talk about the process of how it's made.
Sure. Let's start with slingshot, because that was the first product we developed. So our slingshot distilled Irish gin. The name in itself is, we talked long and hard about this, and we again worked with people in Horbia about it. So there's a famous story about the legendary Queen Maeve of Connacht retired to an island called the Quaker Island, Inchclarone, up in the middle of Loch Ree. But she wasn't a very nice woman by all accounts, and there's a whole other realm of mythology where Queen Maeve interfaces with it. Anyway, supposedly her nephew took it upon himself that she used to bathe in a particular spot on the island every day, right? And that he spotted this, and the legend goes that he practiced with a slingshot until he could hit an apple on the top of a post at 100 yards or whatever. And then one fateful day, he did the act. So Queen Maeve was reputedly killed by being struck between the eyes by a piece of hard cheese fired from a slingshot in the high ground on the Longford shore. Now, that's nearly a misnomer in its own right, because there is no high ground in Longford, anyone who's familiar with this area. So we love that because it was a local story, right? But also, if you look at a map and you look at the nearest point anywhere on the lake to that island, it's about a kilometre away. So you're sort of saying, well, God, there were great men back in those days, but that's still a fair old feat. And you sort of say, well, okay, what would that guy have needed to be able to execute that feat? And it was confidence and accuracy and attention to detail and persistence and all of that kind of stuff. So, and I'd say, knowing the character Queen Maeve was, you weren't going to get too many chances, you know. So, we like that story because it represented what we were trying to do with our brand, right? That, you know, you alluded to it earlier. Here we are setting up a distillery in our hometown in Lanesborough. We don't have any heritage in distilling. There's no local heritage in distilling, certainly not legal local heritage in distilling, right? But yet, it's a scientific process, right? And, you know, we're kind of science-minded people. So, you know, we like the notion of being able to kind of push the boundaries of maybe traditional distilling, right? And that's an awful long-winded way of saying, and again, innovation is one of our values. So in Slingshot is actually the first spirit in the world that we're aware of that has peat as a botanical in the product. So people will be familiar with whiskies and peated whiskies, but in that, it's actually the malt barley is dried using peat smoke. So you don't actually have peat in the product. What we've actually done is taken peat, which is in the locality we're in. We're surrounded in Lanesborough here, three sides by peat and by bog and one by water. And then there's more bog on the far side of the water. And distilled that and introduced it into our product. So in our Slingshot gene, it's actually made up of four different distillates. One is a classic kind of distillate of gin botanicals, so juniper, cardamom, celery seeds, orris root, angelica, there's one or two others that come to mind. Then we actually have a distillate of peat, then we have a distillate of citrus, and then we have a distillate of fresh mint. And again, fresh mint grows abundantly around the shores of Loch Ree, so again, there's a local kind of connotation to that. So that's our Slingshot distilled Irish gin. Going back to the vision bit I mentioned before, you know, how do you start from where we've started, you know, with this grand vision to bring to the world from our hometown the finest, most highly regarded Irish products? Well, you've got to get somebody to validate the finest, most highly regarded products bit for you, right? And how you do that in this business is you enter competitions, international competitions with independent judges. So we kind of started down that process, and to date, in 2 years, Slingshot has won 10 major international awards for the product, including 4 gold medals at really prestigious competitions. And that has lent the kind of validation bit to it. And when we go out to try and bring this to export markets, those medals that we win are a kind of a badge of honor. It forces people to say, God, this product is good. So that coupled with the peat in it, because the peat brings a kind of a nurtiness and a sweetness to the product that is quite unusual. So bartenders love it because it's quite unusual. So that's our gin. Then the vodka, so again, I suppose about a year into the journey, you kind of realize, well, we don't want to be a one-trick pony here, just have gin. We need to look at some other products. So the Zesty Citrus Vodka, if you remember, I was talking about a citrus distillate for the Slingshot. When we looked at that citrus distillate, we said, God, this tastes really good. So we actually took that and worked on that part and created a vodka product out of it. And again, we were really happy with it. We launched that at the food fair the second year. So we launched that October 19 at the food fair. a week afterwards, it won Best Irish Vodka in the Irish Whiskey Awards. So again, back to the kind of finest, most highly regarded Irish spirits. Okay. The third product I have here in front of me is Achill, or distilled Irish gin. So Achill is actually the Irish for juniper. And again, we do some third-party products for people, particularly some hotels down the west and that. And in that, we had found a sustainable source of Irish juniper. So juniper isn't very widely grown in Ireland at all, but we did find some people who were sustainably foraging. And we had been using that distillate in a product for somebody else. And, you know, again, in distilling it, we liked the taste it brought. So what we did is we went off, entered that into a competition, the World Gin Masters, and lo and behold, it won a gold medal, which then prompted us to say, well we better actually release this product. So that was our kind of early lockdown project, was to get the Achill gin out in the market. And what's absolutely unique about Achill gin, right, is it's a 100% Irish gin, okay? So we use Irish whey spirit, and we'll talk a little bit in the minute about the process. So we use Irish neutral alcohol, an Irish juniper, nothing else, right? So it's 100% Irish gin, and it's very, as you would expect, it's a juniper forward gin. There's no other botanical in it. By law, juniper is the only botanical you must have in a gin. So it is a gin, and it's I suppose it's quite like the likes of Genever or spirits like that you would find on the continent. So we're pretty proud of this, and it's actually gone pretty well. And again, one of the distinguishing factors is it's got the Guaranteed Irish mark on it. So we're members of Guaranteed Irish, but they were happy for us to put the mark on it because, again, the provenance of the product is a purely Irish product. Moving on then, so the whiskey. So I mentioned earlier, we can't distill whiskey here purely because it's just too small. But like a lot of other distilleries, what you do is you actually buy whiskey from others, right? And you know, any whiskey older than 6 years old in Ireland has come from one of three different distilleries, you know, being Middleton, Bushmills, or Cooley Distillery. Simple as that, because there was no other distilleries on the island up to then. So, like a lot of other distilleries, what we've done is sourced good product and actually gone on then and put it in our own casks. So we would have bought finishing casks, sherry casks, wine casks, you know, from a range of different kind of brokers, but also directly from vineyards and people like that across Europe. So we released our first whiskey last Christmas, leading into last Christmas. And again, what we did was we released it, we created a brand called The Bridge, right? Under our overall Lochree brand, but we created a brand for the whiskey called The Bridge. And then each release under The Bridge has a different name. I'll come on to that in a second. But the significance of The Bridge is two things. And if you look at the bottle, you can see, well, the first one, and you can see the very bottom is a sketch of the bridge in Lanesborough. So we're here in Lanesborough, crossing point on the Shannon. There's been a bridge here for 1,000 years, right? So it's the symbolism of that it's this connectivity back to our hometown. But the second and most important point for us on it probably is going back to our values and the notion of transparency. It's a mechanism for us to sort of be transparent in terms of saying, this isn't our actual whiskey. We weren't distillers of this whiskey, but what we've done is added some value to it by putting it in our own carefully selected casks, okay? And Bridge, I suppose, then, is this kind of metaphorical journey until we have our own whiskey from our own distillery, right? And it's this, the way we kind of pitch this is join us on this journey across the bridge, right? And, you know, in time, the bridge and the releases within the bridge will be no more because it'll be superseded by our own whiskey, okay? And our own whiskey won't be called the bridge, okay? So it's a bridge from now to the future point. So within that, then, I mentioned a couple of releases. So we released two there a couple of weeks ago. But the first one was called Too Smart, which in Irish, there's an old proverb, Too Smart, Latin Hebrew, so a good start is half the work. So that was the first one. That's actually sold out. We don't have any of it available. The second one was called Ondara, which means the second. My sister Sheila has a child called Dara. He thought it was actually named after him, but it isn't, okay. And then the two I have in front of me, and these are of, I suppose, particular local significance. These are called Mount Dillon and The Station. Okay, so again, anyone familiar with this local area is, you know, for the last 70 plus years, Bord na Mona have commercially harvested peat from the bogs in this area. And for the last 60 odd years, that peat has been fed into an ESB peat burning power station. Today is the 12th of December. So that peat burning power station is closing next Friday. They're currently generating at the minute, but from next Friday, it's finishing. So peat harvesting and peat burning power stations are drawing to a close in this area. So we released these two whiskies. One is called Mount Dillon, which is the name for the group of bogs in this area, which has been commercially harvested by Borna Mona, feeding the power station. And the second one is called The Station. So, and I suppose there's a particular significance here. So, because Lanesborough, I suppose, blossomed on the back of Borna Mona and latterly then ESB setting up operations in the town. And in the kind of 50s, 60s, 70s, there was hundreds of people, if not thousands of people, involved in that and making a very good living from all of that. And that era is now drawing to a close. Really, it was the growth in Borna Mona and ESB in the 50s led to the establishment of a need for education and technical education because it needed apprentices and all of that. So there was a technical school set up here in the town in 1960. There was five teachers. One of them was my dad and the other was my mum, who had come to the school to teach. They came separately, but they joined up at a later point. Okay, so I suppose it's got particular significance for us because if Borna Mona and ESB hadn't come to Lanesborough, my parents most likely wouldn't have come to Lanesborough and we wouldn't be here. It's our tribute really to the kind of history of peat harvesting and power generation in the area and the kind of people who came from all corners of Ireland to work and in those industries in our town and in the locality. But they did more than that. They didn't just work, they built communities. So, you know, there's a thriving community here in Lanesborough, there's a thriving community in Ballyleague across the bridge. You know, and lots of towns around, and that's due massively, right, to the impact of ESB and Borna Mona in the area and the kind of stability and economic stability that brought to the region. So it's our little way of saying, you know, to acknowledge the end of that era and really, you know, we would hope that we are going to be at the forefront of the next era of development of this town with our distillery.
What I love about the products is, you know, when you buy them or when somebody buys them in the United States or the UK or they get sent to Germany or France, when they look up Lochree and when they look up your website and start to investigate what Lanesborough are all about, you know, you're almost giving them a history lesson too and teaching them about the heritage of this small little town.
You know, and it's not just Lanesborough and Ballyleague, I suppose. It's the broader Lochree area. And I mean, you know, Lochree in Irish, spelled R-I-F-A-D-A, means the Lake of Kings. So, you know, I think there's 52 islands in the Lochree and there's, you know, some of them, there's relics of monasteries. And so in back in the kind of, God, I think it was the 5th and 6th century and around then, you know, it was a seat of learning. Right, so people came from around, from Europe and everything else, to these monasteries. I mean, only last week I saw guys unveiling a little statue across the bridge because the local saint over there was Saint Faulia, right? And they have this little statue of two guys in a rowing boat, which looks similar to ours, but it's not. But the other guy in the rowing boat was Saint Faulia's brother, who's Saint Brendan the Navigator, who people might be more familiar with. So there's a whole raft of kind of legend, history, mythology wrapped in around this that, you know, and like even when we would have sat with the people in Port Bia and they did their own research on the area, they're kind of looking at this thinking, God, this is a blank canvas here. There's such rich potential in the stories and the history and the mythology around the area to tap into. And, you know, I suppose it's important in that we're not kind of trying to invent some history, our own version of history. Like we are what we say we are. We're there to kind of try and push the boundaries on the distilling front. But we want to certainly acknowledge the area where we've come from and that whole kind of rich heritage around that. And I think, you know, what we're seeing 2 years into the journey is that resonates with people.
For people listening who want to check you out online, what's your website page?
Our website page is www.lochreedistillery.ie, or the shortened version, lrd.ie. Twitter, we certainly do have a Twitter. I think it's at Lochreed Distill. I have somebody who's of the Twitter vintage who looks after that for us. Our nephew Pori, you can meet him in the back here. We also have active Facebook pages, Instagram, all of that sort of stuff.
Before we go over to these two machines and talk about the process, you know, they're very unique in the sense that when I came in here the other day, the second machine looked like it was something from out of a space movie or a science movie. Talk to people about what the two machines are.
Well, the first one is a still. So we're a distillery. So call yourself a distillery, you need to have a still, right? So we do. We have a, it's made by a company in Germany called Müller. And it, you know, it'd be a very prevalent type of still that would be used in distilling fruit spirits and that in Germany. So ours is a pretty small still. It's 150 litres. But again, it's a fine big kind of copper pot with kind of various other copper pots attached to it. And you know, the principle of distillation is you put alcohol and water in. Alcohol boils at a lower boiling point than water, around 78 degrees. You basically heat the thing up. The alcohol starts to boil off. And then you can run it through another couple of mechanisms which enhance the flavor and actually the copper contact, which is quite important. And then you ultimately condense that vapor back down to kind of 20 degrees. So at the very end of the process, there's a big kind of stainless steel tube, which basically has water running through it. And your vapor is coming in on the other side of it. So the vapor is coming in at 80 plus degrees. The water is coming in on the other side of it. It's a heat exchanger, effectively, and that cools it back down. So your product coming back out then is about 20 degrees, maybe even slightly lower. That's a typically around 80% alcohol comes off the still.
The second machine?
The second machine then is basically just a straightforward blending tank. So when I was describing Slingshot earlier, I mentioned there's four different distillates in it. So we would do four separate, we would kind of campaign different still runs to do the kind of classic gin base, then the mint distillate, the peat distillate, the citrus distillate. And we would blend those in proportion in this blending tank. But also you've got to bear in mind that all of those distillates will be at about 80% alcohol, right? Our bottling strength for Slingshot is 41.7%, because that's where we think the flavors are best on it. So you've got to kind of blend those in the right proportion, but also dilute them down with deionized water, effectively, down to the bottling strength. So that's the purpose of this other tank. Again, there's a theory out there, and it's nearly like if you go for an operation, right? So an operation is a traumatic thing, and it takes you a period of time to recover from it and get back to normal, right? And the same nearly for distillation, right? That you put in this spirit and you heat the hell out of it, right? And you vaporize it and then you condense it back into liquid, right? It's a very traumatic experience for the spirit. And you need to kind of give it time to kind of to get back to normal. Right. And that's, you know, the purpose of this. So we kind of let it rest. We dilute it slowly down from the distilling strength down to the bottling strength. So that's the purpose of that tank. I suppose we're kind of nearly into the process bit of it anyway, so we might as well keep going. So the process end of it really is in making white spirits, which, you know, the gin and the vodka are, is you will take what's called neutral alcohol, neutral NGS basically, which is ethanol, really. So we take delivery of that in industrial quantities, so basically in an IBC, 1,000 liters at a time, which is basically 96% alcohol. So our alcohol is and that alcohol can be made from a variety of things. Some people make it from potatoes, some people make it from wheat or corn or whatever. Ours is actually made from whey. So it's a byproduct of the cheese industry. So if you remember Little Miss Muffet and the curds and whey, the curds go off to make the cheese. The whey is, there's a company down in a food company down in West Cork who have developed a process for fermenting and distilling the whey remnants from the cheese industry to make industrial alcohol, the ethanol. So we take that, put that in the still along with water. So, you know, it goes into the still at about 40% alcohol. And then effectively, what we do with our botanicals is whatever the chosen botanicals are, whether it's a gin run or whether it's a peat run or whatever, we would basically put those into a pillowcase. Showing you here seven botanicals that are in the classic gin. You know, they go in a prescribed recipe. We would basically put that into a pillowcase, tie a knot in it, and put that in the still with the alcohol as we're heating up the alcohol. So the whole idea of that is as the alcohol is heating up and vaporizing, it's picking up the flavors from those different botanicals. You know, the whole process on this still, you know, the distilling takes, a distillation run takes about 6 hours, right? It takes an hour and a half or so to heat the thing up to start with. You know, if you think you've got 150 liters of cold liquid in there, it's like a big kettle. So you've got to heat that up and then slowly distill it to get the kind of flavors you want out of the botanicals that you've put into it. Just for those who kind of, well, no, obviously none of you can see this, but this is all, the still is all a big copper, nearly like an old-fashioned diving bell or something like that. Copper and brass and stainless steel, very attractive looking. You know, even in the distillation process, like the color of it changes with different temperatures. So as it gets oxidized on the outside and exposed to the air. So, you know, when the guys go and polish this up, it'll look entirely different, and then you'll do a distillation run. So it's a really attractive looking piece of kit. So I think it intrigues people.
Yeah, no, it's very unique. It's the first thing I noticed the other day was the machine. And actually, we put a photo of it beside the podcast. So okay. People will get a unique picture of it.
Just to give you a feel for the scale, right? So this is 150 litres. You know, and I said we can't make whiskey on it because effectively what you're doing is we're putting in alcohol at 40% and distilling it up to 80%, right? The typical starting point for whiskey is a wash, effectively like a beer, a non-drinking beer of 8-10% alcohol, which is, you know, has been fermented. So we would only get a quarter of the output out of this machine than we currently get with our gin. So in terms of, it would be, you know, a fool's errand really to try and attempt to make whiskey on this, leaving aside all the other stuff you need before that to make whiskey. Just your output, it would take us to do that and triple the still whiskey could take us 3 weeks to make a cask of whiskey. So really, when I, at the very start of this, I spoke about scale. So what we have planned and we have the equipment ordered for our bigger distillery across the road is, you know, the wash still there, the main, or the first stage whiskey still will be 7,000 litres. So it's going to be, whatever that is, 140 odd times bigger than this. And that will allow us to you know, then I think we have two 5,000 litre stills. That will allow us to produce, you know, around four casks of whiskey. So about 800 litres of whiskey on an 8 hour shift. And that's really the kind of scale you need to be at. If you look at any of the other startup distilleries, they're all in around that kind of 5,000 to 10,000 litre wash still scale. So that's kind of where you need to be at with it.
In relation to the machine, is there a training course that goes with it, or were you just thrown into deep end and shown this is how you use it and good luck?
I put this together myself with the guys who supplied it here the August bank holiday weekend in 2018. So this arrived in various crates, and a guy who we've known again for years, a great guy, works for this Mueller company called Frank Dieter. You know, right, and we spent a weekend putting this together, assembling it and all of that. And then what we did was he kind of gave us some initial instruction on how to use it, okay? And there was a lady worked with us to develop the spirits, a lady called Julia Nurney, who's a German lady. So she was here for a period, and she was familiar with using the still, but also her son came with her, a guy called Felix, and he was quite familiar with using the still. So he kind of stayed with us for a period of about 3 months, I'd say, and allowed our people to kind of get trained up on it. Now, you know, it's not massively complicated, I would say. But by the same time, it's like anything else. It has its idiosyncrasies, and it's better that you know those when you're trying to make a product. You know, the product has to be consistent, right? So it's better that you know that and you're able to get that kind of repeatability and consistency than if you don't know.
I'm just noticing some more barrels up there. What are those in the top right corner?
So come around here. So what you'll see here then is, obviously that still is 150 litres. But, you know, let's say you're trying to figure out, well, what does, what does Meadow Sweet taste like as a distillate, or apple, or some of these things? You can't go and start distilling 150 litres of it. So here in front of me, I've got a small still setup. So these are little alembic stills. So it's a little copper pot that's about, I think it holds about a litre and a half, with an electric heating plate under it. So that allows us to go and basically carry out a distillation process, but on a much smaller scale. And, you know, behind me then is a library of distillates, if you like, where we would have been playing around. I mean, here I see in front of me rosebuds, valerian, wormwood herbs, gorse flower, horseradish, yarrow. So all kind of things where we would have distilled stuff and would then have an idea of what that tastes like as a distillate. I even see rum here where we've obviously tried to make a rum. Pea pods. And actually, I'll come on to this in a minute when I talk about our gin school at home. So really, a lot of the other tanks and drums and that you see around here are a mixture between distillates from the bigger still, which we're waiting to blend up, right? So again, we campaign the product, so we don't just sort of say, oh, do the classic gin today, do the mint tomorrow, do the peat the next day, because after some of them, you have to actually clean the still, which takes a day. So you actually campaign them. So we might do 4 or 5 days of the base gin, 2 or 3 days of peat, and you know, we have to obviously store that product in the meantime before we then put it into the blending tank. The reason why I was coming back to this on the gin, the small still. So this time last year, we actually set up a gin school in Dublin, in back of a pub in Dublin called Churchdown Stores. And so we actually have 16 of those stills in that setup, right? And it's basically an entertainment experience. So it allows people to go in. We talk to them about the different botanicals and the flavors in those botanicals, but they're able to actually then weigh out their own little recipe, right, in a little bowl, put it in a still like this, distill it, right, and basically come out the other end with a bottle of their own gin that they've selected the botanicals for, and you know, they basically walk away with this bottle that they can sign themselves. So again, it's a kind of a, we call it Slingshot Gin School. So it's a way of us getting our brand out there for people to recognize, God, what's this Slingshot all about? So we give them samples of Slingshot while they're in the school, obviously, and then, but ultimately they walk away with a bottle of their own gin. Unfortunately, due to COVID, that we had to close that temporarily. But what it led us to do, and I'll just bring you around here and show you. We were anxious that, I suppose, people wouldn't forget about it, right? Not knowing how long COVID was going to last. So my brother Mike came up with this Gin School at Home kit, right? Which basically is a small little kit that we take our kind of base gin distillate, and then we give them some citrus distillate, and then we give them kind of half a dozen seasonal other distillates, right? And basically, it allows people to go and taste and blend and smell all of these themselves and effectively create their own half bottle of gin. We also include a couple of minis of our Slingshot and our Zesty and some hand sanitizer, which I don't know how much time you have. Hand sanitizer, a whole other story. But these have actually been flying. The whole gifting side of this, these have been flying probably since the start of October by the hundreds, which is fantastic for us. So again, it's another way that we've kind of adapted innovated. You know, and you know, probably some learnings for us in terms of how it's presented and that. But listen, it's that's maybe for after Christmas. Now it's about trying to get these out the door. If you have time to go upstairs, you'll see there's three fellas upstairs making up, assembling these kits and packaging them. Because they're you know, as quickly as we can make them, they're gone. So which is superb. We're absolutely thrilled with it. Part of what we're trying to do here is push the boundaries a little bit, right? So really, the Gin School and the translation of that into the Gin School at Home kit is a way of, it's not necessarily pushing the boundaries, but it's demonstrating our ability to innovate. Okay, and you know, really, I suppose what you're hoping for is that people make the link between that and your mainstream products. That okay, they're going to be good quality. These guys will have done something different. Because that's the kind of track record we're starting to build up. And listen, you know, 2 years into it, we're seeing people coming to us with all kinds of, I won't say weird and wonderful peripheral ideas, but they've kind of cottoned on that, okay, these guys are have a distillery, they're able to distill alcohol products, and they're obviously pretty good at it because of all the awards they've won. Would you have a look at this for us? Would you have a look at that? Could you do, you know, so we've done kind of third-party gins for some hotels. The first bottle I showed you over there is a pal of mine in Dublin who, in the space of a week, we've created his own gin for him to give to his corporate customers at Christmas, right, with his own label on it. Small batch, you know, 24 bottles, but it's very easy for us to do because we know what we're doing, and it's something very unique for him to give to his customers. Just on the kind of innovation trail, and I probably would feel I haven't completed the story unless I talk about this. So, you know, going back to the kind of very start of COVID, I was driving to Cork one day, and at the end of February, I remember it, last Thursday in February, and I was listening on the radio to people talking about COVID and the impact that it had in Asia, right? And bear in mind, at that stage, people still thought this COVID stuff was like, you know, it's kind of like SARS, or it was like a bad dose of the flu. They didn't, none of us knew what the impact it was going to have. And they were talking about things that I suppose got exposed over there. And one of them was shortage of hand sanitizer. And I was just thinking, Jesus, we're a distillery. We have alcohol. Surely there's alcohol in hand sanitizer. Could we look at that? Rang my brother Mike. And literally that afternoon, he was playing around in here and he created the first lot of hand sanitizer for us. And we just took that and listen, in a very short period of time, we actually turned around, made batches of it, had product on shelves. And, you know, so while everyone else was in lockdown, we were actually flat out here. So we went from 1.5 people here to 6 people overnight, flat out 7 days a week making hand sanitizer. And then as the kind of market kind of tapered off in it, around the end of April into May sometime, we then started, again, I have no idea how we came up with this idea. I was flicking around on Facebook one night or something and spotted this foot-operated dispenser unit. And we were going to bring them in from a guy in Spain. And after a couple of weeks, having paid our money for some samples, and here, that was in May, now it's mid-December, I still haven't seen either my money back or the samples, right? But I got chatting to a pal of mine who was a precision engineering workshop over in Ballymahon, Cooney Precision, and showed him this and said, listen, could we do something here on this? And we knocked our heads together. I suppose I'm an engineer originally, so is my brother Mike, and he is a precision engineering company. And we designed a foot-operated sanitizer unit. And, you know, we have hundreds of those out there now. So the whole latter end of the summer was tied up with making these and selling them, right? And the whole idea being that we sell them and then ultimately sell the consumable, the hand sanitizer consumable. So, you know, what that has led us to do is basically create a separate revenue stream for our business, which, you know, listen, maybe it won't last, but I think even with vaccines and all the rest, you know, people's kind of hand sanitizer or use of hand sanitizer and their hygienic habits are certainly going to have changed for a period of time as a result of the whole COVID crisis. So again, another example of innovation. I mean, great crack while we were doing it, but you know, it was kind of, we probably did a year's worth of product development in 6 weeks. So There was lots of late nights. There was lots of tweaking things. But listen, it's all kind of stabilized now. And like, you know, we see that as a market. We will continue to make and sell those units, and we will continue to then service that with our own sanitizer as a consumable. So it's another, I suppose, example of innovation and all of that. And that's pretty important, I think, because again, you know, if we go back to the main distillery or the bigger distillery, right, these things don't build themselves, right? They're highly capital intensive and, you know, require a lot of funding from all kinds of sources over a long period of time until you kind of get your own whiskey in volume out there in the market. So you're into this kind of 5 or 6 year journey, right? And I think a lot of what we have done this year around the Gin School at Home kit, around the pivot into hand sanitizer, then the pivot into the dispenser units, and even then with some of the other products and what we have done with those, we believe we kind of demonstrate favorably to people, listen, these guys are innovative, and they, you know, they don't stand around sitting on their hands. They're thinking all the time. They're thinking about what's next, how can we kind of turn that into a revenue stream, or how can we use it to the best advantage of our business. So it's been, we're here 12th of December. I just feel like I haven't sat down since 12th of March, pretty much.
You haven't sat down looking around.
You know, and it's great. Like it's a massive hive of activity here.
Before we go upstairs, I just want to talk about something which is really positive in all this. For such a small little town, is the fact that maybe in 2, 3, 4 years' time, not only will you secure your future, but there could be massive employment in Lanesborough because you're opened, touch wood, hopefully a bigger outlet, and you're going to be producing mass volumes of alcohol. And I can almost visualise it, and I was driving up the village today and I thought, wow, if this happens, it's just going to be so amazing. I'm more excited than you, even though I've no involvement in it.
Well, I'm just worn out, Margaret. Listen, I suppose that's the aspiration. And do you know what? There's no reason why it can't happen, okay? Prime example, Bushmills, right? If you look at Bushmills, whenever they set up, and bear in mind they're you know, 200 years or 300 years or whatever it is, but the whole area up there around Bushmills and all the towns around basically feed off that reputation and feed off. I mean, I was up there a couple of years ago. The place is wedged with people. Tourists. Now, they have a few other things. They have the Giant's Causeway and the Rope Bridge and all of that. But we have an awful lot of really good stuff here. Okay. And I think, in time, when we get our bigger distillery up and running, you know, that will straight away probably quadruple the number of people we have working on the operation side of it. And then when we get the visitor side of things moving and get that right, it's not inconceivable that we'd have 25 or 30 people working in Lanesborough in this sector, right? And, you know, on top of that, you would see we'll have salespeople out on the ground in whatever territories we're serving. So, you know, it's the type of thing that can kind of turn into a fairly decent sized enterprise reasonably quickly. I mean, it's not, you know, it doesn't have this kind of like a software company where it can just go magic overnight, right? And it's very brand driven. But I think, you know, I'm quite happy in terms of where we're at and the progress we've made on our brand and getting our brand out there, the kind of brand awareness and brand penetration. An awful lot of times it's the small things, right? And I remember seeing a quote once, and I think it was a former CEO of Disney or someone. And somebody asked him, what's a brand mean, right? And he said, the brand is an accumulation of 1,000 little things, right? And your brand will either accentuate or diminish over time by how you treat all of those. So every little thing we do, and it's all about, again, attention to detail, all contributes to the brand, right? So even I'm alluding there to kind of shipping stuff, right? You know, been a learning curve for us. We've shipped stuff, a very, very small quantity of stuff that has been shipped. There's been issues with in terms of somebody gets something and there's a glass broken or it's, and a lot of times it's not our fault, right? It's maybe down to the couriers. But, you know, it costs us very little, except a bit of thought, to go. And what we do now is I personally write that person a letter, right? And I'll send them a mini of our gin or a mini of something in an envelope and say, listen, sorry for the inconvenience, right? And that's, to me, is all about the brand and building the brand. So taking responsibility. If something goes wrong, you take responsibility and you do your best to correct it. And so it's all these little things. And, you know, over time, and again, the reality of it is, this probably won't be in my lifetime or my working lifetime. It'll probably be in my kids' working lifetime, where a lot of the results of the hard work that we're putting in now will come to pass. So, you know, no doubt it could take us a dozen years to build up the brand recognition of this. But, you know, I think it's the little things. And if you keep doing the little things and you keep doing them to absolute best that you can do them, then that's going to be very positive for your brand. So again, you were talking earlier about there's so much stuff here, so much stuff going on, right? That's all the little things, right? It's all of these little bits of the jigsaw. And okay, it's hard work from our side because you have to get all of those little things right. And you don't always get them right. But the ones you don't get right, you bloody well better learn from them, you know? And that's the whole thing. So it's a huge learning process, but it's, it's a hive of activity here, usually. And we'll have quiet periods during the year. January and February, I'm sure, will be pretty quiet. But you can't be working at 120% all the time either. You have to, there has to be some kind of fallow periods in it, because that allows you to, it nearly allows you the scope to think of the next lot of things that you're going to do, you know?
Go upstairs before you finish off and see what's happening upstairs. Yeah.
So here we are, Margaret. As I said, it's a hive of activity. I must do a body count here. There seems to be a few gone missing, but it's lunchtime, right? So you can see what's happening here is we're preparing the gin school at home kits. Again, there's a stack of them here. But you know, I would say 50% of those are back orders, and the other 50% will be sold by middle week. So again, There's no magic to it. There's no automation to it. There's a lot of kind of hand work in it, in terms of preparation and that. But do you know what? Again, it all works. Gets our product out there. Gives people an experience. Exposes them to our brand. So that's what's going on in here. And then in here, funnily enough, I saw guys getting out of a chair there when they were coming in. So this obviously, these guys are obviously less productive. So what we have here is these guys making these the tasting kits. So again, there's two of my sons and a nephew, right? And the two of the three guys here are nephews of mine as well on the other side. So it's all we've roped in at this time of the year. We rope in extra resources, family resources, wherever we can. So it's
extra pay or half pay since they're
family. Well, we feed them an odd bit, you know. But that's I suppose we might.
One's shaking their head there. I don't think you feed them at all.
We don't feed them. Yeah. Well, no, because if you look at me, I eat all the food in our family. You know, I leave that to Sheila. Sheila's the accountant, so I let her sort all the money in. But listen, they keep coming back for more, so they can't be too bad. You know.
Banter with the Irish, your weekly podcast for the banter, music and crack with guests from all over Ireland and of course, not forgetting myself, your presenter, Margaret McHugh. Check it out on Anchor FM/Banter with the Irish.